Welcome to the I Have ADHD podcast, where it's all about education, encouragement, and coaching for adults with ADHD. I'm your host, Kristen Carter, and I have ADHD. Let's chat about the frustrations, humor, and challenges of adulting, relationships, working, and achieving with this neurodevelopmental disorder. I'll help you understand your unique brain, unlock your potential, and move from point A to point B.
Hey, what's up? This is Kristen Carter, and you are listening to the I Have ADHD podcast. I am medicated, I am caffeinated, I am regulated, and I am ready to roll. Welcome to the show. So glad you are here. So glad that you pressed play on this podcast. You won't be disappointed, I promise you. I've got a treat for you today. For any of you who struggle to declutter and organize and clean your home, this episode is for you. On the podcast today, I have Stacy Scott, who is an internationally known decluttering expert and a feng shui practitioner. And she also happens to be a doctor of occupational therapy. She is going to be talking to us today about how important it is to recognize how trauma impacts our ability to clean and declutter and make our spaces our own. She's worked with thousands of clients on healing trauma through the home, freeing women from the results of traumatic experiences so that they can declutter effortlessly, succeed easily, and live by their own rules. I just cannot recommend her work enough. I have been following her on Instagram at Sanctuary with Stacy for quite some time and just really seeing how in my own story, growing up in an energetically chaotic environment really impacted the way that I began to interact with my own space, you know, when I moved out and I had my own place. I cannot explain to you how difficult it was for me to learn how to keep a home that felt good to me. Not a perfectly kept home, not a perfectionistic home, but a home that felt good to me. And a huge part of this was me unpacking my own story, my own wounding, and really healing. And that's what Stacy is here to talk to us about today. Do not be scared. Okay. Like, don't just go ahead and turn this podcast off because we're talking about healing and self-development and like inner child stuff. I am telling you, this is worth listening to. If you struggle with overwhelm, if you resist cleaning, decluttering, even just like dishes, if you feel like maybe even your body goes into some sort of trauma response when you interact with your stuff, if decluttering and getting rid of things makes you want to fight, flight, freeze, fawn, if you are just experiencing all kinds of negative resistance to your own space and you look around at your friends and you're like, I don't understand why they can keep a clean house and I can't, this episode is for you. Okay. I promise you, you're going to love it. Please join me in welcoming my guest, Stacy Scott. So Stacy, hello, my dear. I am so glad that you are finally here. We've been trying to set this up for a while. It was my fault that it took so long, but I would love to just welcome you to the podcast. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. I'm super excited.
So pumped to talk to you. I know that our listeners are just going to be so encouraged by what you have to offer. Can you just tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Yeah. So full name is Stacy Scott, but I'm a occupational therapist, a feng shui practitioner, and a decluttering expert who's also a trauma survivor herself, which is kind of how this information and this wisdom kind of landed in my lap.
But when you say trauma survivor, do you recognize just like one acute event that happened, or is the trauma that you're referring to kind of more chronic, complex, over time type of trauma?
So what in my particular past, I'm mentioning complex and over time. So parents were abusers, narcissistic abuse, emotional abuse, immature parenting, So definitely, I'm on the complex scale, but I work with people who have just, you know, those singular episodes all the way up to more of that chronic and complex.
Sure. The reason why I ask is because, you know, I've identified a lot of trauma in my own life, but I never recognized myself as a trauma survivor until a couple years ago. And so I wonder if there's a lot of people listening who would think to themselves, well, I'm not a trauma survivor. I'm not sure if this applies to me. Do you have and this is so on the spot because I know it's very difficult, but how do you define trauma? What is trauma to you?
So I think for me, it was something that was holding me back in my life, some sort of thought pattern that I had, behavior, anxiety, jealousy, even. It was something that would pop up in my mind and I would feel intensely in my body, but I had no awareness or story around why that was occurring. So it was clearly something from my past popping up into my present. And I experienced quite a lot of this in my 20s. I was in deep denial most of my life. I knew that I actually, you know, I had not come from a good family. Mm-hmm. And I was in deep, deep denial until I actually broke down in the year leading up to my wedding. My wedding was my major triggering trauma event, you could say.
Yeah.
I've been married a couple of years now, but there was no turning away from it at that point.
Yeah.
But I think it's possible to do this work even if you don't feel as intensely as what I've described. If there's something in your life you wish to change, it's changeable. And I often find that if you're willing to look in the mirror, which I know is very hard to do, but if you're willing to look at your past, you can isolate it and find it. I use the modality of inner child healing in my decluttering work, which I adore and love. Mm. And if you're willing to look, you'll find it, and it can soften and it can fully go away, depending on what it is.
Wow, that's so amazing. How does trauma or being a trauma survivor affect someone's ability to keep a tidy house, to function within the home? I have so many people that I talk to regularly who struggle with organization, who struggle with just things piling up. And then there's kind of the next level. And I just coached somebody last week who said that she has begun to recognize that her body goes into a flight response when she sees the dishes. So there's dishes in the sink and she literally has this overwhelming flight response to that. What is the connection between our bodies and the home?
So our homes are some of our first teachers, not only what we experience in the home, the energy, the vibe, the tone of the home. So forgetting for a moment of just the other people that are in the home with us, I know from being an occupational therapist, when we're babies, we are seeking out our environment. We're learning about our environment. This is why babies crawl all over the place. This is why moms with young children say that, you know, my baby is into everything. It's because you're learning to master and manipulate your environment. That's very normal. But if you're growing up in an environment, let's say that physically is very cluttered, dusty, or is in some way not set up for you to succeed, you carry that pattern with you throughout your young adulthood into your adulthood. Mm-hmm. And then when we add in the added mixture of other people in our space, our parents or our caregivers, and what we experience in our relationship with them will then also color our relationship that we have to our homes. So I always like to say that your relationship to your space, meaning how you've set it up, the colors that you've chosen, which is more of the feng shui side, but then also your behaviors, you know, your ability to do home chores, cleaning, decluttering, organizing, all of that is really mirroring your relationship that you have to yourself, which is a really hard thing to hear. But I see this across the board because I work sometimes with folks that don't identify as having trauma. They're like, I don't identify as having trauma, but I like what you're saying. Let's do this work. And it doesn't mean that they had some sort of deep repressed emotion or memory. It just simply means that also something was modeled to them in their spaces that they're now doing, especially women. So this is very multifaceted, but it's so worth diving into because there's so much here. Whether you identify as having trauma or not, there is so much here to make your life better.
Everyone should go follow you right now. Tell us your handle.
So you can find me on Instagram, TikTok, and coming soon, YouTube at Sanctuary with Stacy.
Okay. And that's exactly where I found you. And I was like, we have got to get this woman on the podcast. You have a video about when our parents use chores as punishment for us. We can often resist doing our own chores in adulthood, even when it's to our own benefit. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So, I mean, who didn't grow up to some degree with, well, your room has to be clean before you, you know, go get to play across the street with your friend or get to have dinner or, you know, do X, Y, Z. So even the most well-meaning of parents, I think to some degree, used chores as a, I'm still going to use the word punishment because that's what comes to my mind.
Sure.
As punishment to get your child to do something, right? Mm-hmm. We want them to clean up. We want them to put their toys away. What happens though, and especially on the extreme end of that spectrum, if you were yelled at, if you were forced to, if there was manipulation or physical abuse involved, your body can develop a fight or flight response to that particular chore. It doesn't matter what it is. I often see this with dishes and laundry, but it truly doesn't matter because what's happened is it's been used against you so often that you now will avoid that task to protect yourself. You've created a coping mechanism to avoid it, to protect yourself from that criticism, that fear, that shame, whatever that experience brings up in your body in terms of emotions. So this is why people come to me all the time and they're like, this is so silly. I just can't do the laundry. I'm like, no, it's not silly because it's never about the task itself. It's about what the origin story is and the narrative your body has created behind the task or around the task itself. And so this is when we do that deep dive into the past and say, okay, well, how did this come about for you? So the first step is noticing if you are somebody who really resists doing some of these tasks to the point where you're shaming yourself. Because then we also get societal pressure, especially as women, to clean the house, to make sure it looks good, to do all the things, especially if you're mom, that pressure is even greater. And so we have this perfect storm of shame, fear, and, you know, nervous system dysregulation that just keeps people in this spiral and this loop that then they don't know where to turn to really break it.
Yeah, that resonates so deeply with me. And you speak also about how growing up in an energetically chaotic environment can really impact your own relationship with the home. And remembering my own childhood and how chaotic it was, and thinking about how ADHD is hereditary, and whether it's ADHD or generational trauma doesn't really matter, because energetically chaotic spaces, like, I think every listener would say, like, yeah, that was probably the norm for me. How does that affect our ability to interact in a healthy way with our spaces?
Yeah. So I just want to define energetically chaotic a little bit, because that's certainly not a clinical term.
Sure.
So when I say that, I mean, it could be both, but either or, a home that has a lot of possessions in it. So it felt very, very cluttered to the point where you felt like you had no control over the home and the space. That's totally something there. Or it could also be you know, there was a lot of screaming, yelling, door slamming, things like that. So it could be both. It could be either or. So that's really what I mean by energetically chaotic. But so what that teaches you in your body, and again, a lot of this is not conscious, but it teaches your body to really crave that level of drama and chaos. And so in a lot of my videos, I even, you know, go so far as to use the word addiction, because it can become that, that cortisol stress response. We actually do have research on it now that says you can become, you know, so used to that stress response in your body, that slowing down and trying to then revert back to more peace and calm, both at home and in your body, makes you feel very uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And it makes you feel like something's wrong and can actually make your anxiety worse.
Mm-hmm.
So when you grow up like that, it's hard to see life outside of this chaos. And so we do recreate these patterns in our lives as young adults and adults in our homes in a plethora of ways.
So I talk about it with my clients and I use the term set point. We have like this set point that feels really comfortable to us. Mm-hmm. It might be maladaptive. It might not be like serving us, but it's what our nervous system is wired to feel like is just comfortable. And this is so often why I think we see it with money. I think we see it with weight. I think we see it in our homes where, for example, we can save a bunch of money, but because our nervous system is not wired to actually be able to tolerate money being in our account, we get rid of it. Mm-hmm. Or we lose a bunch of weight or gain a bunch of weight, but the set point, it feels so uncomfortable. And so we go back to our normal, like what is more regulated for our nervous system. And I think it's the same with the home where we can do this like massive cleaning, but it always just seems to go back to where it used to be. And mm-hmm. one of the things that you say in a video is you're not lazy. Your body is just resisting the peace and ease that comes with an organized home.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think there's two different facets here. And I thank you for bringing this up. This is like one of my favorite things to tell people is you're not lazy. You are not unorganized, because that is what everybody says. They have the sometimes the meanest inner critic. And I'm like, look, that voice is not yours. That is society. Mm-hmm. That is grandma. That is mom. That is generational rolling down the hill. Yeah. That is not your voice.
Yeah.
So when it comes to that point, there's two distinctions I like to make here. Is that one, it is very much a societal construct that tells us that home should be clean, neat, and organized at all times, or you are failing. Because what do we do? We look at shows like Hoarders, and then we have shows like The Home Edit. Everybody watches shows like Hoarders with disgust, with, oh my God, I'm so glad I'm not that person. But then we look at shows like The Home Edit, and I'm not hating on anybody there. Those women know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. But we look at those shows and say, oh, why doesn't my home look like that?
Right.
And we've built this triangle-shaped pyramid that says, if your home doesn't look like something a la The Home Edit, you are failing. Mm-hmm. When I know as a feng shui practitioner, our homes go through expansive times where you are just going to have more stuff and times where you are going to naturally go more into minimalism. And there's nothing wrong with living in both of those worlds.
Mm-hmm.
But going back to your point more when it comes to, you know, the healing of trauma, I often hear from folks, hey, look, I spent, you know, so much money on an interior home organizer.
Yeah.
But then 6 months later, my home went right back. And I'm like, I get that. And here's why. It's because mm-hmm. that your body, like exactly what you said, is not yet wired to mm-hmm. really find peace and ease in the open space. Because what I find is definitely folks who are on the side of the spectrum with more difficulty decluttering, they use the possessions as a way to feel safe and secure in their body. It's a security blanket.
Mm.
We are not going to dismantle that with five easy steps. No one else is going to dismantle that process with you or for you. That's a process. I mean, somebody can help you through it, but that's the work you have to do yourself if you feel like those possessions keep you safe.
So you don't have just like a five easy step downloadable PDF that we can all just grab and like be healed from this forever. Because that's what we all want. We want the
five,
right?
If I could bottle this, like I would. Like I don't want people going through what I had to go through completely by myself. And I am somebody who identifies as both being an over minimalist at one point in my life, which is something else that's possible, which is nobody likes to hear. And as somebody who grew up in an extremely cluttered environment and was yelled at constantly for not cleaning my room the right way. So I would just make piles of things, like just piles of papers and piles of my toys and piles of whatever it was. But that was the only way for me to feel safe and in control of my environment in an energetically chaotic home.
Do you think that the minimalistic, maybe like far end of the spectrum, is a reaction to growing up in a home that was super cluttered? Yeah, I think I've got that. That's me 100%.
Exactly.
Is growing up where my, like, the playroom floor was, it was just like you couldn't even see the floor, and I would get yelled at for not, for it being messy, but I was like six. Like, what am I
You're
supposed to do about it? Yeah, I was a kid. And so not knowing what to do with it. And then that just perpetuated, like, as a teenager, my floor was covered as well. And I just remember having like bags and bags, like when I would clean my room once in a while, just bags of stuff. And now I have very few things. Very few things.
Let's unpack the minimalism a little bit, at least from where I see it.
Sure.
Minimalism really, in its modern form, busted on the scene in around 2008, 2010. Marie Kondo's book was actually published in 2010. And there's a lot of chatter now and thought that, you know, it became a reaction to the financial crisis, which, if you're younger, you might not remember it, but I was certainly in college and living through it. And it became this reaction. And then what happened was we all felt like we had to get rid of everything because there wasn't enough to go around. And it became this kind of flip way that our brains were trying to make sense of this world where there wasn't maybe enough, quote unquote, money to go around. We couldn't buy things anymore.
Yeah.
We had been a very materialistic society leading up to that, especially coming out of the 90s and the early 2000s. And then what happened is it also, on top of it, we got this kind of moralness attached to it. Well, if you're a minimalist, you're saving the environment. And I think even that to some degree has been debunked, that we know that some of the largest polluters are actually companies and not individual people. And of course, individual people can do their fair share, but
there's a deeper
conversation to be had there.
Sure.
And so when we have this idea of minimalism, I noticed amongst myself, especially like with the story you just shared, and I see this amongst my clients, it becomes an overreaction to maybe how we grew up. This was me in college. I could not have a damn thing anywhere, or my body went into overload. I went into overwhelm. And what this did was this protected my perfectionistic response. I was in college. This was how I needed to survive. This protected me. But then we also had this societal positivity, I guess, that then said, oh my gosh, you know, they'd say, Stacey, your room is fabulous. Look at this. Everybody's parents would say, why can't your room look like this? And I was really applauded for it. So I never needed to look at it until it became a real problem as an adult. And my husband, who actually has ADD, would say to me, like, why are you getting rid of everything? Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
What are you doing? And I'm like, what? So there's so much more to be discussed when it comes to minimalism and whether that's the right approach for you.
I so appreciate this, and it is really getting my wheels turning, because one of the things that I tell my clients often is, like, it's really hard to organize a lot of stuff. And so if we can get rid of some of that, then there's like the math just kind of works out a little bit better, where there's like a lot less to deal with. And so getting rid of it can be great. But also, I do agree that I think I inadvertently attach a little bit of morality to people or myself with less stuff. Is like, that's obviously just the better way to live. And it's so interesting, because what that reminds me of is the way that we look at weight. And, you know, somebody with an eating disorder, or who's over exercising, or who is struggling with food can be applauded for, like, oh, you've lost weight, blah, blah, blah. And meanwhile, we don't know what's going on behind the scenes. Yeah. That is just not, it's not a healthy way to approach it.
I mean, look at how we talk about hoarding in this country. We talk about it with disgust.
Yeah.
I always ask my folks, you know, on my socials too, like, I want you to turn on the show. I think it's on Netflix now. And I want you just to notice what your mind says, what mm-hmm. your body does. And there doesn't have to be shame in this. We have absolutely been conditioned and trained in this country to see hoarders as dirty, nasty, disgusting. They don't deserve to live in the community, people. Mm-hmm. And as an occupational therapist, I was going into people's homes for a very long time. I've been in thousands of homes, and some of those were hoarding situations. I would go into homes working with Habitat for Humanity, and they'd ask me to go in and evaluate people's homes for mm-hmm. various reasons. And I can tell you on one hand how many times I've seen an actual hoarding situation, but hoarding has become this great big boogeyman in our society where we say, if you even put one little toe over the line of having too many possessions, which, by the way, what's too many? How do you quantify your life in possessions? That's one of the worst ways to quantify your joy, by the way.
Yeah.
And we say, if you put one little toe over the line, you're a hoarder. And we use it as this boogeyman. Mm-hmm. I must admit, most of my clients, when they come to me, my one-to-one clients, call themselves hoarders. I'm like, well, that's the first thing we're breaking, because you're not a hoarder. We have been told that. And I can imagine that a lot of folks in your audience too, who identify as being on the ADD, ADHD spectrum, mm-hmm. might have a similar inner monologue.
Mm. Oh, that's so beautiful. I'm so glad that you're here to kind of dispel some of that, because I love that you question, like, where is that line anyway? Mm-hmm. And what is too much, and by whose standards, and how do we know? Like, those are all such good questions. And now, a word from our sponsor. Hey, Kristen here. I'm the host of this podcast, an ADHD expert and a certified life coach who's helped hundreds of adults with ADHD understand their unique brains and make real changes in their lives. If you're not sure what a life coach is, let me tell you. A life coach is someone who helps you achieve your goals, like a personal trainer for your life. A life coach is a guide who holds your hand along the way as you take baby step after baby step to accomplish the things that you want to accomplish. A good life coach is a trained expert who knows how to look at situations, all situations, with non-judgmental neutrality and offer you solutions that you've probably never even considered before. If you're being treated for your ADHD, and maybe even you've done some work in therapy, and you want to add to your scaffolding of support, you've got to join my group coaching program, Focused. Focused is where functional adults with ADHD surround each other with encouragement and support. And I lead the way with innovative and creative solutions to help you fully accept yourself, understand your ADHD, and create the life that you've always wanted to create, even with ADHD. Go to ihaveadhd.com/focused to join. And I hope to see you in our community today. You mentioned overwhelm, and that is the number one piece of feedback that I get when I am teaching a class on organization or when I'm doing a podcast on it, is it's just very overwhelming. What are your thoughts on overwhelm and how we can kind of navigate through that big barrier?
Yeah, a couple of things here. So first, I think reestablishing mind-body connection through conscious awareness is like 90% of the work. Because if you don't know you're in overwhelm, you will just keep doing the same things over and over. Mm-hmm. So really noticing what your experience of overwhelm is in your body. What are the thoughts that arise? What are the bodily sensations? Because we're all going to, our experience of overwhelm might be different between all of us. So first noticing that you're in overwhelm, noticing maybe sometimes the more negative inner critic that you might have if you open up a drawer and you're like, oh, this is a freaking disaster. What are we saying to ourselves? those might be your triggers that then put your body into overwhelm. Notice then if you then shut the cabinet door and say, nope, can't do it, not today. And then you're hitting your phone to be on TikTok for 3 hours, or you're hitting the fridge, or you're hitting the shop, you're hitting Amazon. Just notice, because we all have different triggers. I'm always very open. Mine is the fridge. I will immediately reach for some toast, and I have to be like, oh, I'm doing it again because I love me some toast.
Yeah. I'm feeling a feeling. Is that what that is? Like when I'm reaching for the toast, it's an indicator that like, I think I might be feeling something that I'm trying to avoid.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
And then I think especially for an ADD, ADHD audience, the best way to then, once you've become aware of what your triggers are, I call them space triggers, is using your own methods to move through it. I find a lot of times my husband, I don't personally identify as being on the ADD, ADHD spectrum, but my husband does. And I think he tries to contort, from what I've seen, himself into all these knots to try and fix or fit into a structure that is really not how his brain works.
Yeah.
I always say to him, I love when you're relaxed because I get to see the full beauty of your brain. You just pull things out of the ether and you put them together and it makes me laugh. And I love watching his brain work in all of its like ADD glory.
Yeah.
And it's, I can tell when he's trying to fit himself round peg square hole style into some sort of structure. So as an example of this, I was talking to somebody the other day on Instagram. They identified as having ADD and they said, what do? I can't declutter a whole closet in a sitting. And I'm like, well, there's your problem. Why are you trying to declutter a whole closet in a sitting? Yeah. If that just puts your body into such a state of overwhelm, into fight or flight, why are we forcing that?
Yeah.
And that alone, I mean, her eyes went big. She was like, oh my God. I'm like, do half of it, do a quarter of it, do one possession. It doesn't matter. Strip all the BS and all of the rules away, and your natural ability as somebody with ADD will just shine through. I don't think this is something you can't do. I think this is something that society has told you you can't do because we're trying to fit you into some sort of box.
Preach. I love it so much. This is why when Marie Kondo came out with her method, or like published her book, and then she had that show on Netflix. And step number one is like, dump everything out of the closet, dump everything out of the drawers. And like that, for somebody with ADHD, you dump everything out and then you just see this mountain, and it's like, my brain, my body reacts to that. Like, no, thank you. I'm out. Goodbye. And now I'm just left with a mess instead of figuring out what's the best way for me to tackle this in a way that feels good to me and makes sense for my brain.
Exactly. Exactly. We're just all reacting to a whole bunch of rules that we think, because they came from an expert, that we're meant to follow, rather than following really our own intuition. We're burying our intuition. We're burying our natural problem solving on how to get from A to B.
Yeah. And that's across the board with us ADHDers. This is not just for our homes or for our spaces. It's like, we do that so naturally because we've been told that we're a problem. The way that we show up in the world is a problem. The way that we interact with people, the way that we even like are doing our schoolwork or whatever. It's always a problem.
And I think case in point right there is a decent argument for why a lot of folks who identify as being on the ADD, ADHD spectrum would benefit from some trauma work rather than constantly looking for a solution. If we slow down and we turn inward and we turn around, we can find all the ways that society in its modern form has failed us. And that's not because your brain is broken. You're like, I just think about my husband. His brain is beautiful. I love it. But we're trying to tell y'all folks to live a certain way that just doesn't work for you. And I think that's so wrong. A lot of it comes, this is my own opinion. I don't have research on this, but I think a lot of it starts in school, where you're told to sit for long periods of time, teach to the test, which came out, you know, that's No Child Left Behind, which I certainly grew up under.
Yeah.
And it's creating generations of folks who not only with ADD, but also with trauma, because I found for me, having trauma, having a narcissistic mother actually turned me uber perfectionist. And so I was like, I must get that A or I am worthless. Whereas I know for my husband, the traditional educational system for him made him feel just dumb all the time. And he's one of the smartest people I know. So, you know, you just, you have this dichotomy. And I think it's just important to maybe look back and think about some of the ways where maybe you were not supported in your beautiful ADD-ness.
That's so beautiful. And I just want to add to that, to say, even if you are not someone who identifies as having trauma in your family, even if you were like, I come from a perfect family, my parents are perfect. Okay, great. Did you grow up as a neurodivergent person in a neurotypical world? The answer, if you're listening to this podcast, is likely yes. And that in itself can be so traumatic. How often, how much more often are we rejected by our peers, by our teachers, by our coaches? The rejection, the being told that we're just not doing it right, how our brains are just like not functioning in the way that everyone else's is. It can be so traumatic. And to your point about perfectionism, Dr. Russell Ramsey out of UPenn did a bunch of research and found that perfectionism is the number one thought distortion for adults with ADHD. We struggle with it hardcore. I would argue that a lot of us grew up with emotionally immature, narcissistic parents, but I cannot prove that. And so, but what we can prove is that we are perfectionists. And so that, how does that reflect in your home when you walk into a space and it's not what you would consider perfect? Does your body react to it? And then how does that impact your ability to just function within your own space?
Yeah, I think we don't appreciate enough that your home is truly supposed to be your sacred ground. And we've ended up with homes that are all cookie cutters of one another. We all have the same couch, the same rug, the same everything. Instead of really asking ourselves, which is impossible to do because we certainly don't do this when we're children, but as an adult now, you have this power to ask yourself, well, what do I really need? What does my nervous system need from my space to heal, to thrive, to feel good? Because we're all going to need varying levels of not only possessions, but colors, design, decor. We all need different things. Like, Kristen, I know you would not be comfortable in my home and I might not be comfortable in yours. And that is, that's perfect. That's how it should be. That's like, but yet we, you know, we come back to this societal moral majority of your home should look like this, or you don't have a nice home. You don't have a good looking home. You don't have a whatever, you know, adjective home you want to insert.
Sure.
So
do you think that we struggle with that because we didn't grow up with power in our spaces when we were little? Is that a thing, or is it just, I have no idea how to finish that question, but.
Yeah, no, I see what you're saying. I think it's a couple of things. I think, yes, we did not grow up with potentially, I mean, I'm talking now myself as a trauma survivor, but like. Sure. Not growing up with the power of control over the environment, the power to make my own design choices, which of course money plays a role in that, which I won't get into. It's a whole can of worms.
Sure.
But then I think then as we grow up, we also have this societal conversation that to be had around how we discuss home, the things that are even on the market to purchase.
Right.
I know a lot of times we all ended up with these all white, all gray homes, especially us millennials, because there was nothing else to buy. You couldn't find color. It was like we were allergic to color for a couple of years. So I think that's really multifaceted. And there's a lot more we could talk about there.
Sure. What is trauma-informed decluttering and why does it matter?
Exactly what I've been talking about this whole time. So trauma-informed decluttering in my world, which is, by the way, this is not a thing. This is something that was born of my research as an occupational therapist, being in thousands of homes, and then my own personal experience being a trauma survivor. It's really just this peering beneath the surface that difficulty decluttering is not a moral failure. It is a trauma response. the same way that over decluttering is a trauma response. And it all comes back to not only your subconscious narratives around who you are and what you get to have in this life, but also some of the experiences and those energetic patterns they created in your body. So we just go deeper. That's why there is no 5-step plan or anything like that. But this is also why my clients, once they declutter for good. There's no going back. It's gone. It's just gone. That pile that's been sitting there for 6 years in the corner of their bedroom, it's gone because we got to the root of why it was there in the first place. And I can tell you, it almost never has anything to do, at least in my trauma world, it never has anything to do with, I didn't know where to put the possessions. I didn't have enough room. I wasn't organized enough. There's always a meaning.
Right.
Same thing with cleaning and the chores and whatever it is. It's never about that stuff.
So what is the process that you go through with your clients? Like if I'm a brand new client, what do I expect the process to look like with you?
So I use the modality of inner child healing. So that is kind of like a guided inward journey. You close your eyes and I ask you just basically a whole bunch of questions. What's happening in your body right now? What's really bothering you in your life? We don't even start talking about possessions or clutter because that's so heavily triggering. We start somewhere else. And you really then get to build an internal compass and an internal intuition around, hey, I trust what my body's doing in every moment. And I know how to talk to my parts that are within me, these prior versions of myself, whether that was when I was 6, 16, 26, 36, 46. And I get to talk to these versions of myself and give him what they needed that they maybe didn't get from the caregivers in their life. It's reparenting in a lot of ways. And then that always somehow gets connected to things in their environment. And some of my favorite messages from my clients are, I don't know, I just woke up today and today was the day I got rid of all of it. And it's because we released that stuck emotion in their body. I didn't need to tell you how to declutter. I don't need to go over your head and over your natural intuition. I just need you to open up and trust yourself. And once you do that, the black trash bags are in the back of your car and you're happily driving them wherever they're going to go. And you're just free of it because you're free of the trapped emotion that has been hanging out in your body for however long.
So that is so similar to my approach with clients. And I just want to highlight that decluttering is Googleable. Like we all know how to do that.
Yeah.
And it's the same with all of the tips and tricks that people want from me in the ADHD space. Like, just give me the tips and tricks. And I'm like, that's what Google's for. You don't need me for that, right? It's like what we need is someone to hold our hand and walk us through the deeper process. And that is the value that you bring to the table. I can Google how to declutter a house in 5 easy steps and watch a YouTube video on that. We all know how to do that. We know how to, but this is not a problem of not knowing how. It's a problem of my body is literally resisting the process and I don't know how to get my body to cooperate with this process.
Well said. Well said. And I say all the time, hey, if decluttering was easy, we'd have it figured out. And I wouldn't be here. I would not have gotten so terribly angry at how we discussed decluttering in this country and the way that I would sit across the table from somebody when I was doing feng shui consults. I wasn't even doing decluttering work yet. And they would open up the door. Their home would be lovely. And they'd be like, oh, ignore the mess. Or, oh, it's so bad in here today. It's laundry day. And I'm looking at what I believe to be a perfect home.
Right.
And that really sent me down this rabbit hole of, why is everybody saying this to me? Why is everybody referencing that they want a Kardashian home? What is happening here with this intersection of this idea of hoarding and minimalism and our nervous systems and trauma? And this was just me synthesizing all of that. But it started with me getting really, really, really angry.
I love it. Love the holding back on the F-bomb. That's so funny. Can you tell me what feng shui is? I don't even know what it is. I'm sorry. I'm so ignorant in this area.
You are not ignorant at all. Because when it popped into my mind completely out of the blue, I actually said back to my conscious mind, what is that?
Yeah.
Because I was on my spiritual journey. I'd started doing a lot of my healing work, which I had mentioned before. My wedding was was my breakdown moment. Mm-hmm. And so I was really, really burnt out from being an occupational therapist for over a decade. And I just took a little spiritual sabbatical. I needed some time off. And I very clearly heard in my head, you're a feng shui practitioner. And I said, what is that? And I definitely had some few choice words in there because that's who I am. And, you know, when I started Googling it, it actually became the answer to all the questions I had been asking myself my entire life. It helped me quantify this unknowable relationship that I had to my home and why I felt so broken and how I carried that brokenness into every single home I then lived in and why I was repeating the same patterns. And so just as an easier reference without all of that, it's really both the art and science of ensuring that the energy is flowing through your home in a way that really works for you and not against you. So we use tangible things to shift energy flow, color, artwork, design, decor, furniture placement. And that is actually enough to really shift somebody's narrative and how they view themselves in relationship to their space. So I use even feng shui in this deeper way, but in a nutshell, that's what it is.
So is that paired with your decluttering work? So is it kind of like a two-step process where we are working on healing the inner child and nervous system work and helping people to have a home then that like reflects their own energy?
Yes, exactly. So I use then feng shui kind of on the back end. Because what we do is we literally, as we're changing the narrative of who they believe themselves to be in their bodies, we're then also shifting the narrative of their home in this tangible way. So for example, I find probably too many people have a home that's a little too white and gray. In feng shui, that's actually linked to the element of metal. And metal energy is fabulous. We want a little metal energy in our homes. But when we have too much, it actually can turn the dial up on your inner critic, on your perfectionism, on that kind of just, I'm wearing a shirt that's too small. Somebody rip it off of me feeling. And I was going into homes as a new feng shui practitioner doing consults, and everybody, millennials, you know, because those were my people at the time, they'd be like, I just bought this turnkey home. It's fabulous. Why do I hate it?
Yes.
And it's all white and gray. And they're like, I know, but that's what everybody wants right now. And I have it. I have the perfect home. I'm like, but is it the perfect home if it doesn't work for you? So we have, that's just how I bring it in. We shift the narrative from being something that is connected to an old version of you to really something that helps you manifest and pull in the who you believe yourself to be and what you're calling into your life now.
I think that was really important what you just said. Our possessions can be representative of the old version of us.
Totally. Yeah.
And I remember when so I lived in this like cute little row home in West Reading, Pennsylvania, loved it so much, but we had zero money and I was a very low functioning ADHDer. So at the time I was working so part-time, maybe 10 hours a week, married to a youth pastor. So you can imagine the income from both of us, very low. And I grew up with parents who were intentionally poor, like poor on purpose. It was a very spiritual thing to do, to be poor. And so I was very used to getting like hand-me-downs and things from other people. And so we got hand-me-down couches. They were white and green checkered couches. And like they were perfectly fine couches, right? But I had a full body reaction to them every time I saw them. And we also had hand-me-down furniture from my husband's parents, which is very generous of them, but still, it was not representative of me and who I was. And I just remember being so triggered in my own home by the stuff that we had, but then being judgmental of myself because who was I to be? Like, I live in a safe home. I live in a nice home. This stuff is perfectly fine. And yet I am so triggered by it. I would have full body reactions and I would start fights with my husband about it. And he would be like, I am not sure what is happening right now. The gentle soul that he is. And it took me so long. And it was a big part of my healing journey. When we moved homes, I did not allow any of that stuff to come with us. And we lived without for a long time. Well, not a long time, but like there were like 2 years that went by with like nothing on the walls because I wanted to figure out what I wanted. And I didn't want my mom's stuff, you know, I didn't want somebody else's stuff. And it took forever, but it was a very conscious choice. And now my home doesn't trigger me anymore.
Well, what you just described is the healing journey. It's consciously becoming aware of that couch, don't like it, don't know why, doesn't matter. Let's get it out of here.
Yeah.
I don't want anything from this home that didn't make me feel good.
Yeah.
And then even if it took 2 years,
right,
or however long it took, not shaming yourself for the time that it took and really going through the process of, okay, well, what do I want? We never ask ourselves, what do I want? What do I need from my space?
And the answer to that is, I don't know. That's the problem, right? How do you help somebody answer that question?
Well, I'm chuckling.
In 30 seconds or less.
Usually I start with colors. I like to go through, okay, well, what colors do you have in your home right now? What colors make your body go ick?
Oh.
Because I can tell you, it ain't the color. It's the experience that you had around the color. We don't hate color. Color exists in the natural world. We often have an experience around a specific color. For a lot of women, I find it's the color red. We have an experience around a specific color that makes our bodies, again, go into overwhelm or some fight or flight state.
Wow.
Fight, flight, fawn, or I'm going to forget the other one at the top of my head, that then we then consciously say, oh, well, I hate that color. But really what's happening is a nervous system response.
Wow. So
that's how I move. I just start with color, but then we go through everything.
Sure.
Go through all the furniture placement, everything.
Yeah.
But you actually made a point earlier that I wanted to circle back around to as part of your question earlier about, can possessions become stand-in for emotions? Yes. Yes. It's never about the possession. It's about how the possession makes you feel. What is the story or the narrative that you've crafted around this possession? So for you with your couches, I'm going to do a little conjecture. This might not be totally accurate.
Go for it.
But, you know, this couch made you feel poor. It made you, maybe it reminded you of some not so great times in your home.
Yes.
And so without really recognizing it, your body just went, nope, that couch ain't coming with me.
Yeah.
And it always kind of just made your body feel icky, off, weird, but you listened to that. And so you didn't even need more. You just were able to listen to it. But that's a very clear cut example of a physical possession. It's not the couch's fault. It's something about the couch.
Right.
Right? I mean, the couch may have had some bad energy or juju wherever it came from. Let's say it was a brand new couch.
Right.
It's not about the damn couch. It's an inanimate object.
Right.
It's about what the couch means to you.
Yeah.
And this is when there's specific pieces of furniture or possessions in people's homes where they're like, I just can't. My body just goes into convulsions when I look at this. I'm like, okay, what does that piece of furniture represent to you? Is it a time in your life? Is it a memory? Is it an experience? Is it something that happened? Is it something that didn't happen that was supposed to happen? So we can even have grief around something that was supposed to happen.
Yes.
And so let's get down to business and figure out what that is, because it's not about the possession, no matter how expensive it is, what it is. I had the same thing happen to me with an IKEA dresser, a $40 IKEA dresser I could not get rid of. Not an expensive piece of furniture, y'all.
Right.
Could not get rid of it until I did this work myself. Mm-hmm. And my subconscious, one of my inner children popped up. It was actually an inner college student of me, popped up and said, this was the only, you're hanging on to this dresser because it's the only time your mother let you choose and have choice in your life in the store in IKEA without telling you that was too expensive or you couldn't have that or criticizing your choices. I got to point and say, I want that one. And she said, okay, I had never had that in my life. And so I was clinging to that dresser.
Oh my gosh.
Your job on the floor, I know.
I know. My gosh. And as you're talking about it, so much story about the couch is coming up. Like I can pinpoint it exactly. It was a hand-me-down, which I was always embarrassed about when my family got hand-me-downs. Not only that, but it was a hand-me-down from someone who was going to be a missionary. And I've got lots of missionary trauma connected to that. So it was, and I mean, it was, I think, pretty much objectively ugly, but is that, are we allowed to say that? I'm not sure. For anybody listening who has a green and white checkered couch, it was ugly, but it didn't need to have a body response. I could have just been like, oh, that's an ugly couch. But instead I was like, I cannot handle it. That's so fascinating. I'm sure so many people are resonating. I wish we could talk all day. I know we can't. So tell people where to find you, how to reach out to you, give us all the details about working with you.
Yes. So again, you can find me any of my socials, Instagram, TikTok, and coming soon to YouTube at Sanctuary with Stacy. My website is stacyscott.co. And if you're interested in starting to do some of this work yourself, I have 3 different workshops that take you through the whole process that I do with my one-to-one clients. Mm. And there is a link in my bio if you're interested in one-to-one work. I am going on maternity leave, but I'll be coming back in spring of 2024. Oh my God.
Oh my God.
But you can hop on my wait list for one-to-one clients. Cool. And that's what I have right now, because basically the start of this year, I had a little niche business doing this, and I went viral a couple of times on both TikTok and Instagram. And I was like, oh my God, what I'm saying really resonates.
Yes.
I thought I was just working with a really niche audience, and it turns out I'm not.
Yeah.
Because I talk to so many different populations, ADD, trauma, just people interested in the home, and they all take something away from what I'm saying. So there's a lot more here. And I'm just, thank you for having me. I'm thrilled to be able to share this wisdom.
That's amazing. Yeah. I'm so glad to have my listeners exposed to your work. And I just really appreciate the work that you've done in your own life to set you up to be able to help other people. I know that comes at a very high price. So I appreciate that.
Yeah. Thank you. I'll do it again. Well, I don't really want to do it again. That's a lie. But
please don't make me do it again.
Please don't make me do it again. It's not the funnest, but you know what?
No.
I did it alone. I did it absolutely, completely alone.
Yeah.
With no one else but my husband to support me, who, you know, he's not a therapist. Like, it's not his job to know how to guide me through this journey. And so I guided myself. And I don't want anybody else to have to go through that, because it took me longer than it needed to.
Yeah.
But I think that was just the path I had to walk in life. And now I get to help others walk it much faster.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
A few years ago, I went looking for help. I wanted to find someone to teach me how to feel better about myself and to help me improve my organization, productivity, time management, emotional regulation, you know, all the things that we adults with ADHD struggle with. But I couldn't find anything. So I researched and I studied and I hired coaches and I figured it out. And then I created Focused for you. Focused is my monthly coaching membership where I teach educated professional adults how to accept their ADHD brain and hijack their ability to get stuff done. Hundreds of people from all over the world are already benefiting from this program, and I'm confident that you will too. Go to iHaveADHD.com/focused for all the details.